from education to employment and everything in between.
It's a clearinghouse for all things shale.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson.
Good morning and welcome to the Shale Gas News. I'm Bill DeRozier, broadcasting from my basement bunker. Feels like this is the only place I broadcast anymore. I do miss seeing the guys in person, especially DC Taylor, who keeps us on the air as always. DC, thank you for all that you do to keep the Shale Gas News on. And of course, I miss my brother down in down in Williamsport, Matt Henderson. He's on assignment once again, though he might join us a little later on the show. I believe he's trying to clear up his schedule, so if you hear him pop up, it's means that he was able to call in. And of course, Rusty Fender, he will be joining us a little bit later on the program. Rusty's a unique guy, a great guy. Love working with him, and I know we're coming up on an anniversary of working together. He is just engaged in a whole bunch of other stuff that keeps him out of the beginning of the show, but we appreciate his continued involvement as always. This is the Shale Gas News, a program that helps us understand why natural gas matters in our lives. It matters in our lives for so many reasons, whether it be keeping us warm, keeping us cool, whether it helps us enjoy the luxuries that we have today, especially medicine and the ability to enjoy fruits and vegetables and meats from around the world. I mean, we can go over and over all of the great things that make energy so important to our lives. A couple of news stories that I saw this week that were interesting. North American fracking activity soars to near pre-pandemic levels. That's an exciting title, especially being in the business here. Fracking in North America has almost recovered the pre-pandemic levels, with the count of started frack jobs reaching a 12-month high, according to Rystad Energy reports. The number of completed wells in the Permian Basin during the first quarter of 2021 exceeded the required output maintenance level, so oil production is set to rise in the current quarter, but will likely slow again later this year. Rystad Energy has already registered 967 started frack operations across North America, and satellite data coverage is incomplete for the past few days, but they estimate that as many as 97 jobs are yet to be detected if the running rate of frack activity is maintained across the country. So that's exciting stuff, and I think it demonstrates that the economy, both worldwide and domestically, is starting to open up a little bit more. People are starting to travel. I know personally, I see a lot more people traveling, not necessarily out of the United States, but across the United States. And if we look back in 5 or 10 years, I'm sure one of the unrealized benefits of the COVID pandemic was the pushing of people to domestic attractions. And what I see a lot of people is going to the Grand Canyon or up to the Badlands in South Dakota. I've had a few friends travel up there. Number of people worked their way out to Vegas, though I wish I was in Vegas right now. But the reality is I think people are choosing to do things closer to home where they're comfortable, but they're also going places that they probably wouldn't go had there not been a pandemic that slowed down, say, international travel. So I know I'm looking forward to getting on the road again this spring or this summer and travel to places I've never been. I know Rusty has made it its life mission to try and get to just about every national park and national monument across the state, and it's pretty exciting stuff, especially when he actually does get to travel, though COVID slowed him down quite a bit. A couple of news stories that caught my eye. Also, U.S. shale output to rise to 13,000 barrels per day. I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. Is going to rise an additional 13,000 barrels per day to a total of 7.61 million barrels per day. And that's according to the Energy Information Agency. The U.S. oil output from the seven major shale formations will rise for a third straight month. The biggest increase is set to come from the Permian, of course, the top producing basin in the country. And output down there alone is expected to rise 52,000 barrels per day for a total of about 4.47 million barrels per day just out of the Permian. Craziness. Seismic shift underway at FERC, and that could kill future natural gas pipelines, according to E&E News. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission's decision to assess a proposed natural gas pipeline's contribution to climate change could have major implications for gas infrastructure going forward, analysts say, including nearly unheard of projects that are rejected. Once one starts to look at the impact of these pipelines on climate, it won't be business as usual, a senior fellow at the Sabin Center for Climate Change Laws said. FERC took a really important first step in a long overdue process. Now, here's the reality and something we fight about all the time on this program. Natural gas has been proven to lower emissions. So if you're going to start looking at that stuff, you can't forget to take into account the different higher emitting sources that natural gas will either displace or retire. And I hope that's done. I hope they don't just look at it as a net contributor to climate emissions when it's so important that we keep natural gas development underway. Topsy-turvy trade world strikes again. New top 2021 export. Question, natural gas. According to Forbes, the United States has the most valuable export, natural gas. For most of the time I've been writing about the U.S. export trade, this is an opinion piece, there was only one number one, aircraft Boeing, which basically had a dominated U.S. exports over the years and years as the only competitor globally to the European consortium of Airbus. But what's happening on the export side of this country, the reason oil exports, gasoline exports, and now natural gas and LNG exports have soared is simply hydraulic fracturing. Once the United States discovered it could extract these resources beneath Texas, North Dakota, Pennsylvania, and New Mexico, the race was off. And of course, here in the United States, we're not controlled by state-owned oil companies. The free market allows us to compete. And technology and innovation allow us to continually produce these resources efficiently and oftentimes more affordably compared to other parts of the world, unless, of course, they just drop the oil price, oversupply the market, and try to push us out. But that has failed numerous times. And I could spend hours discussing the geopolitical impacts, of course, on why natural gas and oil exports are so important to everything that we do. Big oil aims to win back investors with green oil. This is an interesting one, according to Oil Price. Last month, the Biden administration dealt the fossil fuel industry yet another blow after he proposed the introduction of a carbon tax in a bid to address the greenhouse gas emissions that contribute to climate change. White House National Climate Advisor Gina McCarthy went to great lengths to make it clear that the Biden administration is not fighting the oil and gas sector, but rather wants to deploy emissions-reducing technologies to create more union jobs, fuel the American economy, and strengthen American manufacturing. That stuff all sounds great, and we already do that as an energy industry, the natural gas industry, especially up here in the Northeast, and of course the oil industry down in Texas. So I laugh when the industry is not only deploying those emissions-reducing technologies, and we're already creating those types of jobs, why do we continue to vilify what we do? I propose that to the audience, of course, vilify what we do in order to tax us, to try and forcibly create more jobs. It just doesn't seem sustainable versus just allowing the free market to develop into what it needs to do. The energy industry has always been forthright that it wants to develop and adapt and deploy the best available technologies. So let's do that instead of, again, threatening taxation in the name of jobs creation, because that's never worked. Court urged to restore the Dakota Access Permit on NEPA grounds, E&E News reports. The developer of a Dakota Access Pipeline is asking a federal appeals court to reconsider its decision not to reinstate a key permit for the crude oil conduit. Energy Transfer LP called for the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit to rehear its appeal before a full panel of active judges just days before the Biden administration announced in a lower court it had no plans to shut down the controversial pipeline for operating without the permit. Interesting. We'll have to follow that one a little bit. Diamondback Energy raises production outlook as oil prices pick up. Diamondback Incorporated Monday raised its full-year production outlook as the shale and oil gas producer accounted for its acquisition of rival QEP Resources and benefited from a recovery in crude prices. I like Diamondback Energy. I've followed that company for a while, big in the basin, down in the Permian Basin. But one of the reasons I like it is their stock ticker is FANG, and I always got a kick out of that. A pressure company expands to NC, creating new jobs in Columbus County. A leading pressure pipe company will create 44 jobs at a new production facility in Columbus County, according to Governor Roy Cooper. The Pipeline Plastics Holding LLC, manufacturer of industrial pipeline systems, will invest $2 million in the Fairbluff facility, and that will help local regional economy with about $1.6 million in payroll impact this year. Again, find that interesting. Gina McCarthy over here saying we need to tax the energy industry more to create jobs, and yet here is the free market expanding and creating more opportunities for people without that tax. Appalachian story here. I saw natural gas helps boost the economy. This coming from Lancaster Farming. It's an opinion piece. There's a popular quote that reads, politicians use statistics like drums use lampposts. Drunks use lampposts for support rather than illumination. The same could be said about a report by the Ohio River Valley Institute, which alleges oil and gas development has done little for 22 resource-rich counties in Pennsylvania, Ohio, and West Virginia over the last decade. Based on questionable methodology, the findings contradict the empirical evidence we observe each and every day in the field, especially in the agriculture communities across the state. And we've discussed this at length. The best cow on the farm, from a farmer's opinion, is a natural gas well. The royalties keep coming in. They can invest those royalties in their farming operations. They can pay down debt, and they can continue to farm when farming is fun. That's a direct quote from a good friend of ours, of course, Charlie Clark, up in Susquehanna County, a farmer, also a contractor in the natural gas industry. And I can always hear him say that when I think about the best farm on the the best cow on the farm. Oil and utility execs lobby senators on carbon fee. E&E News reports that executives from certain oil companies and utilities and some of the world's biggest companies are meeting with senators and staff to help push a carbon-free and dividend proposal. The Climate Leadership Council has organized virtual meetings with members of both parties and executives from major companies like Conoco, Exelon, ExxonMobil, Ford Motor, General Motors Corp., IBM, and several others. The advocacy push comes as Congress prepares to consider President Biden's infrastructure plan, widely seen as a possible conduit for climate policy. I'll follow along. I think this is always going to be a fight between the majors and then the small E&P companies across the country that have a much smaller, return on investment. So they're a little more sensitive to being pushed that direction. And I've said it earlier in this program, I've said it hundreds of times on this show, I think we need to stop vilifying the industry and we need to start, you know, celebrating the accomplishments, the achievements, and the new technology that they deploy all of the time. Nearly 400 state and local officials call for a ban on new fracking permits. The Hill reports that these elected officials across the country signed a letter calling for an outright ban on new federal permits for fracking and fossil fuel infrastructure after the Biden administration proposed a temporary moratorium on such permitting on federal lands. The letter comes weeks before the president is set to outline the U.S. New national determined contribution to greenhouse gas emissions at the White, blah, blah, blah. It reads on again there. The reality is, I don't think the United States should be in the position of banning hydraulic fracturing on its federal lands, especially since federal-owned land, both onshore and offshore, contributes so much to both the national economy and the regional and local economies of those states. Not something we really see here in Pennsylvania or Ohio or West Virginia in that corridor, but we do see it kind of west of the Mississippi, where the federal government owns large amounts of land. Gulf of Mexico crude oil production will increase in 2021 and 2022. That's what the EIA forecasts. Of course, we'll see what the Biden administration does over the next year to 2 years to impact that. But the EIA forecasts that U.S. crude oil production in the U.S. federal Gulf of Mexico will increase. And I think, again, that accounts for just an expansion of the economy post-COVID. One last story here. Renewable natural gas plant planned for landfill in Invergrove Heights. It's something I'm seeing more and more of. Companies are starting to go to landfills that do produce what we call biogas. It is methane. It's not produced the same way, of course, that you get out of the ground. But what they're doing is they're cleaning up that natural gas and putting it into utility systems or into industrial users. under the idea of RNG or renewable natural gas, because the landfill will keep making that gas. It will be interesting because not all landfills produce the same amount of natural gas, and so many landfills are dispersed, some of which don't even have infrastructure to take that type of gas away, so you have to move to like a bottling system. But I know it's a step in the direction to utilize a resource that otherwise just gets collected and burned off usually, because it landfills do need to remove that methane from the ground. People don't realize that, and they have to do something with it. So with that being said, why don't we throw it over to Rusty Fender? I know he has a news story or two to share with us, and of course he has Fender's Fast Facts. Rusty, take it away.
Thanks, Bill. And some interesting news out of the Empire State. We've all talked about this for the entire 8 years of the program, the 7 years of the program. The Indian Point nuclear reactor finally shutting down. This is courtesy of the New York Times. That means more fossil fuel. So when the Indian Point nuclear power plant shuts, its lost output will be filled primarily by generators that burn fuels that contribute more to climate change. For most of his long political career, Governor Andrew Cuomo railed against the dangers of having a nuclear power plant operating 25 miles away from New York City, saying its proximity to such a densely populated metropolis defied basic sanity. But now the plant is preparing finally to shut down after all these decades, and New York is grappling with the adverse impact of closing will have on another Mr. Cuomo's ambitious goals, sharply reducing the state's reliance on fossil fuels. Now, so far, most of the electricity produced by the power plant known as Indian Point has been replaced by power generation and plants that burn natural gas and emit tons more pollution. And that trade-off will become more pronounced once Indian Point's last reactor grinds to a halt April 30th. It's topsy-turvy, said Isroor Senavanti, a clean energy investor who is a member of the steering community of New York of Nuclear New York, NNY, which has lobbied to keep Indian Point running. The pro-nuclear group calculated that each of Indian Point's reactors had been producing more power than all of the wind turbines and solar panels in the state combined. When Cuomo announced 4 years ago that Indian Point, perched on the east bank of the Hudson River in the village of Buchanan, would be phased out, the plant was producing about one quarter of New York City's power. But the governor had already laid out his plan to have 50% of the state's energy come from renewable sources, wind, solar, and hydropower by 2030. In fact, most of it already has. After one of Indian Point's two working reactors was permanently shut down last summer in 2020, the share of the state's power that came from gas-fired generators jumped in 2020 to about 40% from 36% in 2019, federal data show. The share of the state's power from renewable sources increased slightly to about 30%. Quoting, "This is one of the greatest strategic blunders in the history of energy in New York," end quote, said Robert Bryce, an author who has been a constant critic of the shutdown. Quoting again, "It's a catastrophically wrong decision by everyone involved in the Empire State." So April 30th is D-Day finally after several seismic problems, cracks in the reactors. Back when I was a kid in the mid-70s, they found cracks in the reactors back then. They've been, you know, using adhesive tape and bubble gum to keep the plant going. April 30th, D.C., that is the shutdown date of the famed Indian Point nuclear reactor 25 miles north on the Hudson of New York City. A very interesting story this week, DC.
All right, Rusty. Very interesting. Well, thank you for that. And well, let's go right to your Fender's Fun Fast Facts.
And thanks to all the nice folks, too, who you ran into, Bill, who had great comments about the Fast Facts. Something that started here by accident by asking a question almost 8 years ago. So thanks to all the listeners for the fast facts, and we'll try and keep them interesting as usual. On Monday, April 19th, is a historic day in television. The character of Bart Simpson first appeared on the Tracy Ullman Show, a very short-lived show, ran, I think, about 26 episodes or even half, probably 13 episodes, back on April 19th, 1987, 34 years ago. So it appeared on the Tracy Ullman Show on a television set. All the characters on The Simpsons have four-fingered hands. The only exception is God, who has five fingers. Homer Simpson originally had a secret identity of Krusty the Clown. As the series went on, after 4 years, the producers dropped the idea. This is disturbing, DC. Time magazine named Bart Simpson one of the top five most influential people of the century back in 1998. Well, you know, for good or for bad, I know the Time listed Adolf Hitler and folks like that as influential. Paul McCartney agreed to do a voiceover on The Simpsons only if the creators agreed to turn Lisa into a vegetarian for the rest of the series. In return, the producers did it, and McCartney waived the $500,000 in royalties to use Maybe I'm Amazed as the closing credits theme. Now, that's pretty interesting.
Wow. All right.
The Simpsons uses a television floating timeline, one of a few series, which means the characters never age. That's pretty interesting. Huh, okay. They got the name Bart. It's an anagram of the word brat. Bart's middle name, Jojo, is a tribute to another animated character in a long-running series, Bullwinkle and Rocky. Of course, the moose and the rocket. The Simpsons DC is the longest-running primetime comedy series in history. It's also the longest-running primetime animated series in United States history.
Right.
Name the second longest-running animated cartoon series in television history. Prime time. And I was six when this debuted, so I remember it very well.
Oh, see, I almost went with Family Guy because I know they've been, you know, off and on since 1999.
I'll give you a reprieve from the governor. It's not Family Guy. Try again. Right. Try again. 1962.
Animated.
You should
series.
Know this, even though you weren't alive in 62. You should know this.
Well, I mean, I immediately want to go to like some sort of Looney Tunes thing, but they've been around since the
40s.
The 30s.
Exactly.
Oh,
this is so obvious.
I mean, I know the Flintstones were around for a few, but not.
The Flintstones, the longest running 6 years. And that,
6 years. That's it. Wow.
People had a shorter attention span back in 1962 and 63. The Flintstones.
All right.
Yeah, you see, so you got it by default, DC. Good
right.
job. And those are the fast facts this week, Monday, 34 years of The Simpsons, DC.
All right. Thank you, Rusty. And stay tuned for more of the Shale Gas News here with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, Matt Henderson, and I'm DC Taylor. We shall be right back and hope you will too.
Why are natural gas pipelines important?
The most efficient and effective way to safely move natural gas is through a pipeline system.
We're constantly monitoring our systems and making sure that we're operating in the most reliable and, most importantly to me, the safest manner possible.
This system, over its life, is 99.9997% safe.
Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation, producing abundant opportunities.
Get your new roof installed with Green Rhino Builders. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. They service all of Northeast PA. Green Rhino Builders can meet you in person, video chat, or even speak over the phone. They can even get you an estimate without stepping foot on your property. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. That's 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. Green Rhino Builders can even finance your new roof for as low as $79 per month. Does your roof have damage that may have been caused by the weather? Green Rhino Builders is the first company in NEPA to work with all of the major insurance companies and can help you get your replacement roof for only the cost of your insurance deductible. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get someone from Green Rhino Builders out to your home to inspect your roof. Call Green Rhino Builders, 844-900-GREEN, for your free estimate today. Online at greenrhinobuilder.com.
It's always a good time for Greenlee's Barbecue.
For all your meat eating needs.
Pulled pork, ribs, brisket, chicken thighs, grilled chicken planks, ribeye steaks, salmon burgers, and beef burgers, plus salads and side dishes delivered or for catering at your weddings, company parties, and other crazy soirees, you crazy kids. GreenleesBBQ.com. Greenlee's Barbecue, Route 6, Tunkhannock. Look for the school bus next to Keystone Truck Caps. Greenlee's Barbecue.
Yeah, the benefits are very good. The benefits are all day one here. The dental health, vision, everything is top notch. Everything is very good.
Drivers wanted.
The 401k plan, we have a 6% matching program. The medical, there's a health spending account, and you could use that for co-pays. You could use that for prescription drugs. You could use that for anything just to help along with deductibles. And then you could put in from your paycheck, it's tax exempt, you could put in so much bi-weekly, and then that helps out too, because it is before taxes. So.
If you're looking for steady year-round work with a company that cares about you and your family, at GDS, you will drive locally and be home after every shift. Get all the details and advance your career with GDS, a division of Cabot Oil and Gas, where you'll drive the newest fleet on the road.
The steady schedule, the 4-2 schedule for a driver, a 4-2 schedule is great.
Gas Search Drilling Services. Get the phone number at gassearchdrilling.com.
Lindy Corporation is a pipeline and infrastructure company, and Lindy is proud to work in the Marcellus region, towns and cities, and beyond. Apply at lindyco.com. And remember, if Lindy wasn't hiring yesterday, chances are we will be hiring tomorrow.
Are you a truck driver looking to earn $1,000 to $2,100 a week with full benefits? Well, Eastern Freight Systems and Tunkhannock are seeking local, regional, and OTR drivers. They even have an oil field division with lanes based in both Tunkhannock and Pittston, PA. They're looking for motivated drivers who are looking to earn good money to join their team. A clean MVR with professional driver training or experience are required. Come join the growing team at Eastern Freight Systems by calling 570-836-8050.
If you're in construction or the gas industry, your team's getting it done 24 hours a day, and so is BX3. When you're working, so is BX3. They're your prime connection to parts, tools, and equipment rentals. If they don't have it at their Montrose or Tunkhannock locations, they'll find it for you. Somehow, some way. Trust me, they know people who know people. They're the relentless problem solvers. Call BX3 in Tunkhannock, 836-3000. In Montrose, it's 278-7368. Again, Tunkhannock, 836-3000, Montrose, 278-7368.
Welcome back to Shell Gas News. And next up, we're going to hear a little bit about the petrochemical industry. Some friends of ours held a conference a week ago, and we had a great panel discussion on the plastics opportunity, petrochemical opportunity from the Northwest PA. Like a lot of part of Pennsylvania, they're trying to capitalize on the petrochemical industry, the plastics industry. So Lance Hummer, who's with the Keystone Community Education Council up in Oil City, aptly named, had a discussion with some of the local workforce development, economic development folks from up there. And we're going to learn about what they're doing, how they're readying manufacturing and the training the workforce for the future. So let's take a minute and hear from Lance and his group.
Lance has brought us a solution to Tom's problem. And Tom talked about a lot of the issues with the plastics information and everything. He's going to tell us about what's happening in northwestern Pennsylvania and have some, I think, really great case histories of the information and the opportunities that are available there. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Lance.
Just something a little bit different about our presentation is that we have six panelists. And the PowerPoint is all here, and we're going to move through that here. Hopefully it'll move smoothly for us. But I wanted to start off with telling you, I am really proud to be here. And the reason I'm proud to be here is because it's representing the Northwest Pennsylvania. I'm extremely proud to live in Titusville, Pennsylvania. And if you haven't heard of Titusville, Pennsylvania, look it up, because it's where the petrochemical industry started. It is the valley. Titusville's within the valley that changed the world. And so we have one of the previous speakers spoke about muscle memory and what the population has. We truly have that because it's where Quaker State started, Pennzoil started, Wolf's Head started. So we have that. We have that culture. We wanted you to be aware of a lot of the collaboration that's been going on up in the Northwest. And the speakers will be doing that. What I'm going to do is you have in your booklet the listing of who the panelists are and their bios. I'm not going to go through that. I'm just going to quickly give you the order and kind of what they're going to be talking about. Deb Lutz, who is from the Strategic Early Warning Network program, she's going to be talking about the Northwest Pennsylvania Oil and Gas Hub Task Force, and then the connections that we've had with the state and the state coming to us to work with plastic companies in where that has led. The second speaker will be David Hoffman, who is from Ames Institute up in Erie. And he's going to tell you more about that because that's a premier educational facility business. And what we have done, we developed a plastic process technician apprenticeship program, an approved program, and how much that has progressed to the point that it's now going to another state also. Then Hope Lineman from the Clarion University will be talking about taking these technical trainings that are out there and connecting them with the programs they have, the Applied Technology Degree Programs. It's just a wonderful opportunity, a stepping process for education and training. Jason Williams is from Penn State Erie, the Barron College. And the reason we're having him speak is you need to be aware of what's going on up in Erie and the plastic training that they have up there and the work that they do with companies and the research. And then Shana Smith is from the Northwest Commission, our local development district. And she's going to be talking about the study that was recently completed about the growth in petrochemical industry, what that can mean, and where businesses potentially could locate. And then I wanted to round it off with an industry representative. And Brent Ward is an excellent person to give you that connection, to draw things together of how important it is to businesses. Brent is from Integrated Fabrication and Machining in Mercer County. And he also was on the team PA board. And so we'll just kind of round it all up. I'm going to start off first with Deb. And if you want to put the slides on, I'm going to stay up here just in case.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Deb Lutz. I'm the Erie Regional Director for the Still Valley Authority and the Strategic Early Warning Network, or the SEND program. I just wanted to tell you a little bit about my work. The SOME program has 5 offices across the state of Pennsylvania. We help small to medium-sized manufacturers with free consulting and specialized in layoff aversion services. For over 30 years, SOME has been able to help manufacturers with services such as cost reduction programs, in-depth financial analyses to increase production efficiencies, new market and customer opportunities, and more. My contact information, as Lance mentioned, is in the conference presenter bios, but it will also be on the next slide. So please don't hesitate to give me a call. There we go. So our panel's title is called Inspiring Tomorrow's Workforce. How about this for some inspiration? The future is here. Our governor, Tom Wolf, in the state of Pennsylvania has said, Pennsylvania has a once-in-a-generation opportunity to develop and implement a strategy that will cultivate a manufacturing renaissance and transform our economy across the Commonwealth. The foundation for building a diverse and robust petrochemical and plastics industry was initiated by the decision by Shell Chemicals to invest in Pennsylvania. And we must ensure that we make the most of this chance to create good-paying jobs for Pennsylvanians. Now I want to talk about the formation and evolution of the Northwest PA Oil and Gas Hub. The Northwest PA Oil and Gas Hub, or the Hub, is a collaborative professional resource partnership that exists to promote regional expansion and development of the petrochemical industry for the economic revitalization of Northwest PA and the surrounding areas. Lance and I serve as co-chairs. The Hub started back in 2009 when we began bringing together leaders of economic, education development, industry, and local government. A plan was developed to provide information and programs needed to educate communities and businesses about the petrochemical industry supply chain businesses with instruction on how to do business with oil and gas companies, and facilitation of programs about the impact of the proposed cracker plant on manufacturing in Pennsylvania. So what is being done to capitalize on this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity I mentioned and inspire tomorrow's workforce? In October of 2017, in response to a request from the Pennsylvania Department of Community and Economic Development, the hub convened a meeting of manufacturers in the Northwest region who were engaged in some fashion in the plastics industry. There were two critical issues the businesses identified at that initial meeting. The first was marketing the plastics industry, and the second was developing an apprenticeship program. After the need for an apprenticeship program was identified from businesses participating in the plastics industry partnership, Lance Hummer and the hub stepped up again to take the reins on developing the plastic process technician apprenticeship program. The plastics process technician apprenticeship program is a collaboration of 12 plastics manufacturers in the Northwest region who pioneered this unique program. In keeping with the next generation industry partnership model, the subsequent curriculum that was developed was driven by employers. The real work on how to mold the wants and needs of the employers into a meaningful apprenticeship program fell to Lance and his organization, the Keystone Community Education Council. An RFP for training providers to respond to was developed, and after a series of interviews, resulted in the creation of a new, unique partnership between two seemingly unrelated and potentially competitive training providers, the American Injection Molding Institute, or AIM, and Clarion University. As our next panelist, David Hoffman, will explain, AIM provides the technical training at their state-of-the-art facility located in Erie, Pennsylvania, and Clarion University, as Hope Lyman will explain, provides the general education components. There is also a considerable amount of time spent by all of our partners to ensure the students' success every step of the way in the apprenticeship program. The Plastics Process Technician Apprenticeship Program is a state-registered program, one of the first earning this designation in the Northwest PA region. It has been particularly gratifying from a professional and participating resource partner in the plastics industry partnership to see the continued success of the Plastics Process Technician Apprenticeship Program. Recruitment has started for the fourth cohort set to launch in the fall of 2021. I'm also proud to say that the Keystone Community Education Council was the recipient of the 2019 Pennsylvania Apprenticeship Outstanding Program Award for the Plastic Process Technician Apprenticeship Program. Now I will turn it over to David, who will talk about the specifics of the training of the apprenticeship program that is done at AIM. Thank you.
Okay, good morning, everyone. Mold design, injection molding, and part design. We also work closely with Autodesk Moldflow Simulation in their software. We are an authorized education provider, training provider for their software, which is essentially a program that is used to simulate plastic flow in a mold to optimize, again, part design, mold design, process settings, and also aid in material selection. In addition, we offer hands-on processing courses at three different levels. We call that our Molder Series, Molding 1, Molding 2, and Molding 3. Molding 1 is essentially for the folks on the shop floor who are not establishing a process, but they're responsible for taking an existing injection molding process and getting that mold up and running in a machine as quickly and efficiently as possible. Molding 2 is for those folks in your operations that would be developing a process, you know, different strategies and how to establish a good process for a plastic part. And Molding 3 takes it to another level in terms of more critical thinking, troubleshooting. And again, in Molding 3, we'll focus more on those pillars that I mentioned earlier, the materials, mold design, part design, and processing, and how they more closely interact with one another. The item on the far side, the PTE program, is kind of our flagship product. It's a bit of an engineering level program. It takes about 10 months to get through. And again, if you notice the topics that are there, we focus on those key items, again, in relationship to injection molding and plastic parts. Each one of those courses is a week long, plus additional online reviews, and it is the first accredited or ANSI accredited education program outside of a university setting. And recently, actually 2 days ago, we just received word from ANSI that our molding 1, 2, and 3 courses have also passed their accreditation. So we'll be adding that to our list here. And so when Lance and Deb kind of approached us and others, in particular Clarion, who we ended up partnering with the needs of the local industry and developing this apprenticeship program. And so we looked at the needs as identified by the industry, and we said, in relationship to the courses that we offer, how can we fit and meet the needs of those roles? And obviously we couldn't do everything internally here, so that's where we partnered with Clarion University to develop an entire program and pitched that idea to Lance, Deb, and the state, which did receive state registration. There are a variety of companies that have been involved in the apprenticeship program in terms of sending some of their employees here for to go through this apprenticeship. It is a 2-year apprenticeship program. There are on-the-job training requirements as well, which I'll talk about briefly coming up as in the next slide. This is the curriculum of the apprenticeship program. It starts off with OSHA 30 and team building. That's where the students will come here and spend 5 days, and they will receive their certification in OSHA 30. That is one of the courses that is run through Clarion University. And then they come back a few months later for plastic materials. And if you notice the time frame beside the plastic materials, it says 2.5 days plus. The plus side of that is once the students go through this course, we don't test them right away. We allow them to go back to their job, and then we have weekly online review meetings for about the next 6 weeks. The point of the online review meetings is really to drive home the learning retention and make sure that the students understand the material and drive it deeper into their knowledge and able to comprehend what we're trying to relate to them. And it also allows us to do what we call course corrections. And what I mean by that is if a student's sitting in the class and if they get a topic backwards in their head, say for example, viscosity, I want to know that before it becomes a problem and before I test them on this to allow them to make that correction and get the content correct. And that comes out in these online review meetings. So basically we take a 2.5-day course and extend it over about a month and a half. So that seems to be working very well. I'll comment a little bit more on that towards the end. And then they'll come back for an exam. And we follow that model for all the courses here at AIM. So for plastic materials, for mold design also, there's online review meetings. And then we transition into molding one. So molding one, again, is for folks just starting into the processing world of plastics. And it's learning how to take an existing process sheet and start up a mold safely and efficiently. But again, that is followed by 4 online review meetings. And then they come back, we'll do a morning review because this is on the machine portion of the classroom also. So there's classroom lecture and on the machine, the hands-on labs, and they're responsible for being able to start up a mold using our prescribed methodology in order to pass this course. And then the last course that AIM is involved in here is molding 2, and this is a much more rigorous course. It's 10 days, again, which essentially is 2 weeks, but those 2 weeks, again, are separated with additional online review meetings. And then they come back for more classrooms and labs. And the last 2 days of this course is testing, again, both a written test and on the machine performance test. One thing we did add recently, so in kind of seeing how these how this program is going with the students and where they're struggling and so on, we modified it kind of midstream in the first cohort and set it as a policy going forward by adding molding math. And that's 2 days of math because we saw people struggling with some of the math involved in some of the mold design, but more so in molding 1 and molding 2. And so we needed to put in a way to resolve those math comprehension that some of the students were struggling with. And so we modified the curriculum, added 2 days of math, which seems to be really helping out in terms of the students progressing forward throughout the program. Now, some of the items that are required that we make sure people are aware of because this just isn't a training class that you come to the class, take the exam, and go on your way. This does require the online review meeting. So they do need access to a phone, a computer, internet access. The meetings online are scheduled for about an hour and a half each. Some of them are a little shorter, some of them take a little bit longer. Plus it's all their personal time required to complete the homework. So what all this boils down to is essentially in-class training, 327 hours. And as part of the state apprenticeship program, they're required to complete an additional 4,000 hours of on-the-job training. Now, for each of the courses that they're going through, we provide the employers with a list of recommendations for on-the-job training to help guide them along that way. So a little bit on what we learned through this process, right? So our intent of this program was to help the students develop critical thinking skills by not just focusing on how to run a molding machine, for example, but really tying it back into the materials, the mold design, the part design, and the process and how all of those work together. We want them to be able to recognize potential problems and mitigate them before they become an issue at the press, and get them really comfortable around molding machines. So while they're going through this program, they'll be exposed to up to four different brands of molding machines. And some of them are set up with different units and the controller interfaces are all different. So it's a bit challenging, but back in their shops, the chances are they've got a variety of molding machines there as well. So this helps bridge that gap and quell some of the fears that they may have in walking up to a different brand of molding machine. And with Molding 2 in particular, learning or teaching the folks how to develop and document a molding process for new molds, and with the understanding that some of these folks in their different roles may not be doing that role currently or in the near future, but it's at least exposing to them because somebody in their company is, so that they can understand better on how that person is doing what they're doing and learning from that, and eventually maybe want to step into that role as they progress through their company. So that wraps up my discussion. I appreciate your time. My contact information is on there, along with Lance. Lance is a key driver for this. If you got specific questions about the program itself, you can certainly talk to Lance. Or if you got questions about AIM and how we fit into this, you can certainly reach out to me as well. But thank you for your time.
Environmental protection affects you no matter what industry you serve. Oso Wash provides the only certified clean solution you should trust for your vehicles. Oso is the only certified oil and gas industry clean tank washing facility in Northeast PA that's available 7 days a week. If it could get dirty, Oso can clean it. They're about 6 miles north of Tunkhannock off of Route 29 on Aldovan Road. 570-996-WASH and find them on Facebook. They are Oso Wash.
Are you looking for work in the gas industry? Linde Corporation is always looking for good people. Apply at lindeco.com. Linde installs water lines, sewer lines, and gas lines. We're busy in the Marcellus region. Apply for your next career at lindeco.com.
Why choose Lackawanna College? Lackawanna College can give you the start you need. Spend 2 years earning your degree and go right to work earning a great salary. With 29 degree programs in competitive industries like culinary and hospitality management, petroleum and natural gas, and sonography, Lackawanna College can help you find your future. Visit lackawanna.edu for more information on how to apply or contact the admissions office at 570-961-7814. Why choose Lackawanna College? If you're looking to get ahead in your career or start a new one, Lackawanna College's Continuing Education Department offers a wide variety of certificate programs that are highly affordable and can help you get back to work quickly. Specialized training for workforce development and allied health careers is available, as well as the Lackawanna College Police Academy and the EMS Academy. Call 570-961-7813 for more information or visit lackawanna.edu. Find your future at Lackawanna College.
Cabot has been, you know, a fantastic corporate partner because they caught the vision. We have a goal to end hunger in Northeast Pennsylvania by 2025. Cabot's contribution is helping make that happen.
I live in Springville. I'm a landowner in Auburn Township. They've treated me with respect, my property with respect. They do an excellent job. Everything has been neat. There's never been anything out of place. Anything that they said they were going to do, they did. They came to you and told you what they were going to do. They gave you a timetable. They followed that timetable. Do not be afraid to invest with these people.
Industries like Cabot not only helped and lent their support to the Dietrich Theater, but they reached out and asked how they could help in other ways.
ways. Cabot has shown us that they want to invest in our community, that they're here to stay, and they want to support us for the long run.
For more information, go to wellsaidcabot.com.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson. And I'm DC Taylor. Coming up next in just a couple of minutes, we'll get to the jobs segment, exploring your careers in the gas and energy industries. First is the top five most read stories over the past 7 days from MarcellusDrilling.com. Each weekday, Marcellus Drilling News locates and shares news from the Marcellus and Utica Shale. Over 50,000 people read MDN each month, so we use it as a barometer to tell us which stories people find the most interesting. MDN editor Jim Willis compiles a list of the top stories each week. So here you go. The top five most read stories over the past 7 days. Number five, Democrats, including West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, block West Virginia income tax cut. We have to confess, we're not impressed with West Virginia U.S. Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat. We had hoped he might be somewhat independent from the radicals in his own party and provide some balance to an out-of-control leftist agenda being pushed by Chuck Schumer and Joe Biden. Manchin is failing in that regard. He's just another toady for his party. We're not surprised. The latest evidence that Joe Manchin is not the man of the people and conservative/moderate Democrat he claims to be comes from his opposition to West Virginia Governor Jim Justice's plan to phase out the state income tax, which does have implications for the shale industry. We've written a couple of posts on Justice's plan to get rid of the state income tax, because part of that plan includes increasing the severance tax on oil and gas. We're not thrilled with the concept of raising the already high West Virginia severance tax rate, even if it's a graduated increase. Sooner or later, prices for natural gas will go higher, and when they do, the higher percentage of severance tax paid will take a big bite out of driller profits and out of royalty checks. However, we think the overall concept of eliminating the state income tax to attract more businesses and individuals to the state is a great move and should be pursued. According to an article appearing in the Wall Street Journal, national Democrats, including West Virginia's own Joe Manchin, are making it hard, nearly impossible, for Justice to implement his plan. The editorial board of the Wall Street Journal asks, why do Democrats hate West Virginia?
Number four, D.C., COVID aftermath, CNX Equitrans cutting the South Point office space. Now, in our opinion, we've yet to fully understand the long-term permanent changes in society that have happened because of the COVID-19 pandemic. There are signs that things have permanently changed. For example, a significant number of people now work from home rather than commute to an office in downtown. Many workers like working from home better. In a signal that COVID long-term changes are impacting the Marcellus Utica industry, two major MU companies with office space in the South Point Business Park, that's a Pittsburgh suburb in Washington County, are shopping a collective 213,000 square feet of office space they no longer need because their workers have permanently relocated to home offices. In the space of 2 weeks, both CNX Resources, that's Big Marcellus and Utica Drillers, and Equitrans, big pipeline companies, formerly EQT Midstream, announced they're looking to sublet massive amounts of office space at their South Point headquarters buildings.
Okay, number three, most popular story over the past week. Eureka building Marcellus wastewater recycling plant in Dimmock, Pennsylvania. Eureka Resources currently operates three frack wastewater treatment facilities in the Marcellus Shale, two in Williamsport, Lycoming County, Pennsylvania, where the company is headquartered, and one in Wysox in Bradford County, PA. In October 2019, the company began extracting lithium from Marcellus wastewater at its Wysox facility. Eureka can currently provide up to 25% of the entire country's demand for lithium just from Marcellus wastewater. Eureka has just announced that it is expanding current operations in Wysox and will soon begin construction of a new facility in Dimmock, Susquehanna County. Yes, that Dimmock, the Dimmock made famous or infamous by Josh Fox in his Gasland fictional anti-fracking documentary. Dimmock will be Eureka's fourth wastewater treatment facility.
That's an interesting story. Lithium. Nice. Supply the world with lithium. Wow. How about that, huh?
Yeah,
nice. From Wyoming County.
Okay.
Number 2D, yesterday, Lola Energy's purchase of Edgemark Assets. Now, here's the backstory. We brought you the news that Lola Energy continues to transform itself with the purchase of what was Edgemark Energy's shale assets in Butler County, Pennsylvania. LOLA picked up 22,000 net acres of Marcellus Utica leases, 48 producing shale wells, and 18 DUCs. ACE reporter Paul Goh from the Pittsburgh Business Times spoke with a LOLA CEO, Jim Crockard, and got the backstory behind the deal. It seems Crockard had his eye on that part of the state for a long time. He even considered an offer to work for Edgemark years ago. Good thing he didn't take the job. Last year, Edgemark went through bankruptcy and ended up selling their Butler County assets to Key Bank, one of the company's biggest creditors. After the asset sale to Key Bank, LOLA began talking to Key Bank last summer about buying the Butler assets. As talks progressed, it got more serious. LOLA formed a new entity, LOLA Energy III, as the new entity that would take possession of the Edgemark assets. A deal was recently completed, D.
All right. The number one most popular story on MarcellusDrilling.com over the past week, EQT Chesapeake interested in buying Marcellus Utica driller Alta Resources. We don't write much in MarcellusDrilling.com about Alta Resources, a shale drilling company co-founded by the inventor of shale fracking, George Mitchell. But that doesn't mean Alta doesn't drill in the Marcellus. In 2020, Alta was in the top 10 PA drillers list. Alta owns some 547,000 gross at 239,000 net acres producing natural gas from approximately 900 wells in the Marcellus Shale across Bradford, Wyoming, Sullivan, Lycoming, Clinton, and Center counties in Pennsylvania. In February, we told you that Alta is shopping all of their considerable Marcellus assets, looking for a buyer. Looks like EQT and Chesapeake Energy have both been creeping around Alta's back stairs. A little, what was that, Gordon Lightfoot?
It was creeping around the back stairs. Yeah. No, it was...
Sundown.
No, yeah, Sundown, Gordon Lightfoot, 74. That's right. Good record.
Creeping around my back stairs.
There is, that's right.
Anyway, EQT and Chesapeake Energy have both been creeping around Alta's back stairs. Bloomberg is reporting both EQT and Chesapeake have expressed an interest in buying Alta, according to, quote, people familiar with the matter. Just for context, EQT recently closed on a deal to buy Chevron's roughly 400,000 acres with 500 producing wells and another 100 wells in progress for $735 million. Also for context, Chesapeake exited bankruptcy just last month. A little too soon to go shopping, wouldn't you think? Okay. Well, those are your top five stories thousands of people read this past week on MDN. If you like to keep track of the headlines each day, it's easy. Just sign up for MDN's free daily email at MarcellusDrilling.com/email. Now time for the job segment, exploring your careers in the energy industries. It is brought to you by Lackawanna College and their School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Rusty?
Thank you, DC. And in Pennsylvania, Foster Energy looking for roustabouts out of Montrose. Seneca Resources, an opening for representative for their stakeholder relations departments out of Cranberry Township near Pittsburgh. JW Power Company looking for a natural gas compressor service technician. It's out of Towanda. TRC Companies, the environmental planning, permitting, and licensing interns slot still open. It's out of West Chester, near Philadelphia. Henkels and McCoy, the line guys, looking for a gas utility laborer out of Bluebell. ROC Service Company, LLC, looking for an experienced roustabout out of Williamsport. Cleveland Brothers Equipment, an electrical power generation and industrial engine field mechanic out of Harrisburg. Westinghouse Electric Company, looking for a new graduate engineer for Cranberry, Pennsylvania. PTW Energy Services, a journeyman out of Tunkhannock. And PPNL, a field supervisor electrical opening based in Allentown. In Ohio, Gulfport Energy, a control room technician out of St. Clairsville. Williams Companies has an opening for an operations intern out of Harrison. Energy Transfer Family of Partnerships, an instrument technician based in Lima. Cimarron Energy, a field technician level one opening out of Belpre. Comanche Gas Solutions, a field technician out of St. Clairsville. Mid-Ohio Pipeline Services, pipeline welders for the entire state of Ohio. Southern Cross Field Services, a field service technician based in Cincinnati. American Electric Power looking for an energy advisor out of Tiffin. ROC Service Companies here looking for an experienced roustabout and general laborers headquartered in Cambridge. And Purple Land Management, a title abstractor and landman. It's out of Canton. In West Virginia, RDR Energy Resources has openings for pipe MIG welders based in Clarksburg. Think Power Solutions, a transmission utility inspector for the entire state of West Virginia. Southwestern Energy Company looking for a field operator based in Jane Lou, and Terra Resources Company looking for a mechanic midstream that's based in West Union. Apex Energy Services looking for a roustabouts and general laborers based in Overbrook, and TC Energy, a welder position headquartered in Cameron. Several in New York State this week. The DDS company is looking for a land surveyor out of Syracuse. Mirabito Energy Products looking for a natural gas and electric account executive for Albany, the state capital. New York Power Authority, a smart grid system engineer, level one, out of White Plains, Westchester County. New York State Electric and Gas looking for a supervisor for the construction and maintenance division out of Olean. CanAcre looking for a land agent, land acquisition specialist, and electrical transmission specialist, three jobs, headquartered in Binghamton. Marathon Energy Company looking for an energy analyst out of North Syracuse. And Kinder Morgan, big name in the industry, an operations specialist opening for the entire state of New York. And those are the jobs, as DC mentioned this week, sponsored by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas, Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. We'll be back next week, same time, same stations, as we start our eighth year, as we began on Earth Day, April 22nd. So we'll see you next week here, same time, same stations, for the Shale Gas News as we start our eighth year. For Bill DeRosa, Matt Henderson, DC Taylor, I'm Rusty Fender. Thank you so much for listening to Shale Gas News.